HYY.
I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Retired Principal Ozzie Wright was just brought in to restore some law and order to Bartram High School in Philadelphia. The school has been plagued with violence, chaos, and conflicts this year. The problems came to a head in March when a conflict resolution specialist was knocked unconscious by a 17-year-old student. It's been a tough year for all the public schools in Philadelphia because of the budget crisis, which has meant fewer resources, including fewer staff and bigger classes. Nonetheless, the situation at Bartram is unacceptable. We asked two principals who have confronted similar problems in their schools to be our guests, and let me introduce them to you. Otis Hackney became the principal of South Philadelphia High School in 2010, and nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to be back.
Nice to have you back. Also with us is Linda Cleat Wayman. She's in her second year as principal of Strawberry Mansion High School from 2010 to 2012. She served as assistant superintendent for all 52 high schools in Philadelphia. And Linda, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I should say that both of our guests have been classroom teachers, so they have pretty much covered the gamut here. Let me begin with you, Linda. And I was reading about what you did at Strawberry Mansion. And one of the first things you did when you came in as principal was to lay down some non-negotiable rules, some kind of law and order rules. What were those rules?
Absolutely. The first thing we had to establish was the whole concept and idea of following rules. Because a lot of my students, they entered the school building thinking with the frame of mind, I do what I want. No one tells me what to do. I do what I want. So we had to come up with some simple rules. Of course, no fighting, no loitering in the hallways, no hoodies on your head, no cursing at one another. And those are some of the basic rules we had to, but the bigger, we had to enforce those rules. So they were used to rules.
But they had to be enforced.
Enforced.
And that was that key?
Absolutely key.
I mean, there's one thing
and
to have rules.
And they were not used to that, being enforced.
In fact, I thought it was interesting, no hoodies, no boots either. Why?
Well, because they had a history of kids being stomped with boots. And so my first year when I got there, we said we could have no hoodies and we could have no boots. And boots were used as a weapon.
Wow. And how did you enforce these rules?
Well, I gave them a list of consequences. Either you follow the rule, you suspend it, you detention, or, those are two things. Those are the only two choices you have, is suspension or detention. You have nothing else. But I enforced the suspension to the point that, listen, you have to follow the rules or you have to be suspended.
So were some of the kids angry at you for establishing the rules and then enforcing them?
Oh, absolutely. Because they would tell me all the time, we get rules every year, but nobody ever enforces them. And so why in the world are you continuously put up these consequences when you know we have challenges? So because they were not used to actually the rules being followed.
And actually, you were the fourth principal in 4 years at Strawberry Mansion at the time.
Absolutely.
So they were used to a lot of principal turnover.
Yes.
Otis, let me turn to you. And I remember interviewing you a couple of years ago. I think you had been at South Philadelphia High School for a year, perhaps even just starting at the high school. That school had different kinds of problems. There were a lot of conflicts between groups of students there.
Yes, but it was still safety was the number one priority. And the approach that I took with South Philadelphia High School was safety for all students. You know, I understood that there was certain things I needed to do to stay in compliance with the Department of Justice and everything like that. But I always made it very clear to all of my students that the safety of all students is very important. And I think that helped, you know, gain a little social credit or capital with my students around that issue, because, you know, they may have thought that coming in on board, you know, they weren't sure how I was going to approach the difficult challenges of South Philadelphia High School.
And there have been some principal problems there as well.
Yes, there were a lot of principal turnover was very high at South Philadelphia as well. And so, you know, me being there this is my fourth year now. For the seniors that are graduating, these are the ones that started with me. And they may be, because I was talking about it with someone in the school, saying that in maybe about a decade, the first group that have gone all the way through with the same principal. And those things really, really matter to students and for schools in terms of how do you create the climate and establish a climate that you need in the school to create an atmosphere for learning.
Because in many ways, I mean, it is about having rules and abiding by the rules, but it's also about a relationship, is it not?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So often when I talk to my students, I talk to them about expectations. And I look at it in terms of, because students can argue with you about rules, but you can't argue with me about my expectations. So if my expectations are that you be to school on time, that you be dressed appropriately, that you treat people with dignity and respect, you can't argue with me about my expectations. So even if they do something wrong, I usually say to a student afterwards, I say, well, what do you think I expected you to do?
Oh.
And they're like, all right, Mr. Heckney, you're right. And because the thing, they can argue with me about a rule, should they wear a hat or not wear a hat in a building and everything like that. Okay, but the expectation is that you do what? Because what students need to learn as we socialize them to become adults, that when you go to work, there are work rules, but there are also work expectations that are implicit in a job or in a profession, and they need to understand the difference between rules and expectations to be, you know, more successful as adults.
Is this tough love? Is that what we're talking about, Linda?
Yeah. You have to remember, a lot of our students really don't experience rules, love, expectation, hope for their future. They don't really experience that. So it's the whole package. It's making them understand that rules is a part of life. And the only way for us to coexist in a community of learners is we have to live by certain rules. But in order for them to understand that, you have to explain to them why rules are important and show them examples of why it's important. It's constant communication. It's constant talking. It's constant building respect. Once they gain once you have their respect, they pretty much will abide by most things that you want them to do. And that's the one thing that they're going to have to do in Bartram High School. You know, you can go in these schools talking about how you're going to lock somebody up.
Right.
They don't care about being locked up. They've been locked up.
I was just going to say they've been locked up.
They don't care about being locked up. What they care about is who believes in me, who loves me, who will take the time to talk to me, to listen to my challenges, and plus also steer me on the right path.
Well, and I've years ago I worked with young people, and sometimes there's this wall where, you know, it doesn't look like they care that I might care about them. You have to figure out how to get beyond that wall.
Absolutely, and that's conversation. And, you know, when you've been in this business as long as Otis and I have, and I've been doing this almost 30 years, I can pretty much look at a student and I'll know there's something there. So I'll bring them into my office. I'll have a conversation. I'll dance all around what I think it is. And then I'll eventually tell them, but you can change your life, though. Now, I can't do anything about what has happened to you to 18, but we can look forward and past that. And that sometimes break down a wall and say, okay, Ms. Wayman, this is really what's going on. And then some of the situations and some of the stories they tell you just absolutely blow your mind.
We're talking about what? Violence and
we're talking about violence, molestation. We're talking about their responsibilities at home. We're talking about situations where they've seen things they shouldn't have seen, done things they shouldn't have done. And some of the stories are just earth-shattering. And then you wonder why, how in the world you do all of that, go through all of that, and then come to school.
Are we talking about traumatized kids?
Oh, most definitely. I think that is, I know there's some work in the field now that a lot of people are doing around the effects of trauma on young people. But especially students that come from, you know, low poverty or high poverty communities, that the effect that that it has on the students in terms of just trust, but also how they socialize with each other and how they handle their emotions is very, it would shock a lot of people if you're not used to that environment with how explosive some children can be at times. And the only thing that keeps them under wraps are the relationships that they have with the adults in the building. And even given, you know, especially during this budget crisis with the budget cuts that we have experienced and loss of key personnel in buildings, those relationships sometimes walk out the door with those people. And so you have to work really hard to reestablish those relationships so that way when you have that explosive student, but they have that one person that you know can calm them down or get them to, you know, redirect them, and that person is no longer there, those students feel betrayed. They feel a lack of trust. They want to know why, you know, Miss So-and-so left us. And it makes it very, very difficult for us to do what our initial purpose is to really educate children. But it's so many other distractions that take us away from that ultimate goal. So that way, you know, we can create, you know, productive citizens.
Kristen Graham had a piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer on Sunday about a girl, a freshman at Bartram High School. Quoting here, she's a cheerleader, freshman class president. She helps lead an after-school program focusing on music, art, and fashion. Her schedule is packed with honors courses, and her friends know she is a stickler for proper spelling and good grammar. And then she goes on, but for a month, she's had no science teacher, and her math teacher's door has been broken three times by unruly students. Since September, three of her cell phones have been stolen. She can't take textbooks home, and some of the books she uses in class are torn and graffitied. She was threatened by some girls. She went to her mom. Her mom went to the school, and that put an end to that. But nonetheless, we have these Gianna Hawkins, Linda, and they want to go to school, and they want to learn.
A lot of students come to school to learn every day. And the only thing we could try to do with them is keep them focused on the positive things that are happening in the building. In all of these buildings, positive things are happening. So we try to get the kids to focus on that, but they are distracted by the violence and the fear of the violence. A lot of them come to school every day just really in fear of what they think may happen. So, you know, trying to keep them calm, trying to keep the building calm, trying to keep it at a comfortable tone. You can actually feel the rise in the building when things are about to happen, and the kids feel that. So just trying to keep everybody, you know, calm is a very difficult situation, but something that we have to do because the students are in tune to everything that happens in the building.
They have the kind of antenna for what's going on.
Absolutely.
Do you as well, Otis?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, sometimes when you walk in the building in the morning and you're standing there during the intake as students are coming in, you just get a sense of, all right, everybody stay sharp today. Mm-hmm. I don't know what
it is.
You
just feel it?
But you feel it. Mm-hmm. And so you need to make sure that the adults in your building are very proactive and vigilant in terms of, you know, keeping eyes open, ears open to different issues and alerting us. But then, you know, and I always go back to relationships, but the relationships that you have with students also impact that, because then they'll let you know what's going on. And you say, okay, let's get on this problem and let's see if we can deal with it. Sometimes it's something you can deal with in a matter of moments, and then you find out that it's a much bigger issue, and now it's taken up all day or 2 days out of your schedule to do, you know, from visiting classrooms or, you know, talking to some type of community-based partner to support your students. You're spending your time on this issue because, you know, if it explodes, then it becomes it could become a distraction for the entire year. And that's the situation that Bartram is in. Mm-hmm. And I really feel for, you know, the adults in the building, the students in the building, because I think they were put at a deficit. You know, there was a principal that came in, you know, a little bit after the start, and with the budget crisis, it's just a very difficult job to take on, to tackle. And so now it's just, you know, really trying, you need, putting the right people in place now and supporting, you know, Ms. Collins while she's there to get ahead of the issue and see if they can calm things down for the remainder of the year and then next year get off to a very strong start.
And that's Otis Hackney. He's the principal of South Philadelphia High School. Also with us is Linda Cleat Wayman, and she's the principal of Strawberry Mansion High School. Both of them joining us today in Radio Times to talk about some of the challenges of their jobs. And both of these schools have had to deal with the problems of violence and conflict within their schools. We invited them because of the problems at Bartram High School in Southwest Philadelphia. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY FX, presenting the new original series, Fargo, starring Billy Bob Thornton, Martin Freeman, and Allison Tolman. Fargo premieres tonight at 10, only on FX. More at fxnetworks.com.
HMS School for Children with Cerebral Palsy supports WHYY. HMS School, located in University City in Philadelphia, serves school-age children and young adults through age 21 who have complex, multiple disabilities, usually resulting from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, or other neurological impairment. An open house will be on Thursday, April 24th and Saturday, April 26th from 9 to 11 a.m. Details at hmsschool.org or 215-222-2566.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, Roseanne Sadoya survived the marathon bombing but then had to endure a year of surgeries.
You know, I have friends that laugh and say, after all I've been through, I shouldn't worry so much about it, but the whole situation is a little unnerving.
We'll see how a survivor moves on next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Vision 2020 supports women's equality and WHYY and presents Lunch with bestselling author Lisa Scottolini, Monday, May 5th at 12 noon at the Bellevue. Registration at drexel.edu/vision2020.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this hour of Radio Times, we're talking about what it's like to be a principal in a Philadelphia public high school. And again, our guests are Linda Clayett Wayman, principal of Strawberry Mansion High School, and Otis Hackney, the principal of South Philadelphia High School. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times. Actually, I should say to our listeners that during this break, Linda was talking about literally what her day is like, and I think that would be an important thing for our listeners to understand. This is a high school of less than 500 kids, almost 500 students, mm-hmm. And it's pretty much a one-woman show, it sounds like. Go ahead.
Well, I have to lead the show, if nothing else. So I am the only administrator in the building. You know, you come in the morning, you make sure everybody's in their place, all the teachers in the classroom, get all the coverages together, make sure when it's time for, when I don't have a nurse, make sure when the students don't have all their medication, I have to dispense the medication, run downstairs, make sure lunch is in session, make sure everybody's in their place, go back upstairs, make sure everybody's on post. So it's, and when there's conflicts in the building, you don't have many people to take them to, so a lot of them have to come to me. So I'm dealing with conflicts all day. Then you have to go into the classrooms, you have to observe, you have to make sure the teachers are teaching, then you have to come back downstairs, and you got to plan for professional development. So
That's your day,
part of it.
That's part of your day. Does that sound like your day, Otis?
Yes, I mean, I have a little more support because my school is larger. We have almost 1,000 students, so I do have some assistant principals, and you know, I have a nurse full time. But you know, we are a lot larger than we were last year, and also we are a receiving school. So blending two defined school cultures, South Philadelphia High School and Bach Technical High School, blending those two cultures into one building has been, you know, definitely a challenge with making sure that we keep the peace. And we've had some incidents, but we try to stay ahead of it and make sure that, and then once, if something does happen, you know, just making sure that we're timely and appropriate in terms of our actions. So that's what we're dealing with, but it's nonstop running. Mm. You know, I have 1,000 students, and technically I have one secretary. It doesn't make sense. I have 1,000 students with two counselors, which is, you know, better than others, but still it's not what our students need, because it's not just support to getting the college and financial aid forms, but it's also, you know, the behavioral and social support that, you know, counselors are supposed to provide, that they're just, they're hamstrung right now in terms of being able to provide adequate services to students on a consistent basis.
How do you deal with conflicts? If something is coming up, as you said, sometimes there are days you just know something is brewing and you've got to deal with it.
Well, I mean, the first thing is if you can get ahead of it. So, you know, if you're getting some good intel from students, or you're, you know, we also follow social media. Several of our school police officers and key people follow social media, so you keep track of what's going on. And if you can nip it in the bud, you do. But when something does happen, like I stated earlier, it's just timely and appropriate. You want to nip it in the bud as soon as you can. So if there is a fight in the building, most of the time, most of the building doesn't even know. So if you weren't in that vicinity, because we will just snuff it out. You know, we have good school police officers. My sergeant and I, we're on the same page. She's a graduate of South Philadelphia High School, so she, you know, she cares about the school. And so she makes sure that her officers are always on point. And that relationship is very key in the success that we've had at South Philly. But it's really addressing an issue as soon as it pops up. You don't let it linger. And, you know, if you have to get the students out of the building, you get them out. We've done mediations at, you know, our district, Philadelphia Police Department headquarters, if it's a big enough issue, to get them involved in other agencies to let the students and parents know that, no, we do take it that seriously.
Let me go back to you, Linda, again, something that we were learning mm-hmm. from you before the school began, actually from both of you, which is the number of students in your high school, mm-hmm. Strawberry mm-hmm. Mansion High School, who have already been incarcerated.
Yeah,
as you said, that's not a threat to some of these young folks.
No, and you know, I was going to actually comment on Mr. Hackney's comment about having 1,000 students and more resources. And I think that's one thing in the district we have to focus on. It's not about number. I have 500 students. He has 1,000 students. But I can guarantee you the 500 I have make three times the amount of kids he have in issues and problems. So I don't get the support and I don't get the resources because of the number, but all of the challenges are different. So yes, a lot of my students come from incarceration. A lot of my students are special needs students. A lot of my students have a lot of mental health issues that has to be addressed on a daily basis, all day, every day. So I think when we deciding on resources and what each school gets, the number can't be the sole indicator of who gets what services. Because, again, Masterman may have 500 children, but their 500 is not like my 500.
Different kind of need.
Right.
Say that again?
It's a different type of need.
Right.
So, they're, you know, students are needy in any building, but it's just different types. And
yes.
So, and I agree with Linda, you know, 100% on that. It really, the population you serve should determine the level of support in many ways, or the types of support that you receive, so that way you can adequately support your students.
Where are the parents when we're talking about, and I'll put that to you, Linda. I mean, some parents obviously very engaged in the schools and their students' life, but unfortunately not enough of them.
Not enough of them. We need a lot more parent involvement and parent engagement. And we need the parents to be on the same page that we're on, meaning when we're giving a positive message to students, we don't need for them to go home and make it to go against what we're telling them. We believe the school is important. We want them to be in school. And we need our parents to continue on with that same message. When they come home, go to school, stay in school. But sometimes our messages conflict.
Either the parents are telling them something different or not talking to their kids at all.
Correct.
How about for you, Walt?
It's the same. I mean, we have parents in our building every day. Sometimes they're happy, sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
But we try to do what we can to make sure that they walk out, they feel a little bit better than when they walked in. That trust me, that is not always the case. But the engagement that you need for your parents in terms of understanding why education is important is sometimes very difficult for them to understand for some of the students that we serve. And so understanding the impact, the generational impact that a good education could have on you and your family, getting people to understand what that means. So it's not just you and if you go to college and what that means, but it's also you, your kids, your grandkids, because now you have just broken a cycle. And so especially if you have you're dealing with a child who may be the first to go to college. And we still have a lot of firsts, and I think some people underestimate that, even though we have more students going to college than ever before, you know, according to data and everything.
Right.
But in certain communities, we still have students where they're the first. And so how does that work? How do we support them so that way they can be successful? But they have to overcome a lot of obstacles in order for that to happen. And if we don't have the proper resources to deal with that, so that opportunity gap is there. And we need to address it, you know, with, you know, with fair funding, more resources come into schools that, you know, that we can actually utilize, and principals have some say on how I can use these resources in my building.
But would you agree that the parents are key, are critical to a child's success in school?
Most definitely. I mean, there's, and I can't quote the exact study off the top of my head right now. I didn't know we were going this way. But, you know, in terms of one of the biggest impacts that, you know, to a child's success, especially in high poverty areas, is parental influence and stability of the home. So if those things are not there, you're really dealing with, you know, students with a lot of challenges.
Yeah, but
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I wanted to also add to that. In our school, our motto is, of course, we want parental support and we need parental support. But I tell my staff every day, it's our job to educate them whether we have the support or not. You know, and so I tell them every day, all day. Well, I'm everybody's mother. So because I'm everybody's mother, if I was coming to a parent conference, show me what you would show me as a parent about this child that may not be physically, biologically mine, but they're all my children. So, and that's a hard thing to do on a daily basis, to think in terms of, okay, I may not get parental support, but they're still my responsibility. And that's the way I look at it.
And that's Linda Cleat-Wayman. She's the principal of Strawberry Mansion High School in Philadelphia in her second year as principal. Also with us, Otis Hackney. He's the principal of South Philadelphia High School. And they're talking about some of the challenges that they face working as a principal. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We have a comment from Bridget. She lives right behind South Philadelphia High School. Whatever he's doing it right. The kids come to school quietly and are kind. That's to you, Otis Hackney.
Thank you very much. Wow, that's a great endorsement.
Let me get, looks like Lee from Winmore to join us. Lee, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for doing this. I have worked with both Otis and with Linda at the school district, and I am incredibly proud of the way they are taking on this enormous challenge. And I think the question and issue is, as budgets are slashed and funding withheld, how important it is for experienced professionals to be in these buildings. You can't replace it, and it's hard to buy. And I'd love to get Otis and Linda's feedback on just the funding challenge, but also how important experience is. I'll take my answer off the air.
Lee, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Linda just pointed to you, Otis. Go ahead. But then we'll get back to her. She's not off the hook. Go ahead.
When it's not just the experience piece, but it in terms of experience of putting the people with the right fit. So you can get an experienced principal, but if you put them at Strawberry Mansion or South Philadelphia High School, if they're not the right fit for that school, then they may face challenges or may not know how to handle challenges that, you know, Linda would handle, like, you know, like, okay, I've done this a million times, I know what to do, or some the way I would handle it. But it is very important to make sure that you do identify good talent, and the district I know is working to do that. But we've also lost a lot of good talent over the, you know, past couple years, and so we have to replace that. And so it's really how do we develop principals or assistant principals that can go into challenging schools and provide them with the right tools and support so they can be successful. But you cannot underestimate the experience, but it's the type of experience and putting the person in the with the right tools and the right position that, you know, could dramatically change a school, at least get some short-term wins, but also over the course of the long term in terms of being able to establish a vision and culture for the school.
And I would think too, Linda, I mean, you need the right kind of teacher too, that wants to teach the kinds of students who go to Strawberry Mansion.
Exactly right. Well, like Otis just mentioned, it is the right fit. The principal is right, has to be the right fit for the school. And besides the principal, the entire staff has to be the right fit. So after the principal, there are the teachers. And the teachers have to know when they come into these schools that these students are traumatized. They're traumatized, but they also want to learn, and they're willing to learn. But they do have to take special care, special time. They have to respect them. They have to plan for them in order for all these students to achieve. And it takes special people. It really does.
How big are the classes at Strawberry Mansion?
Well, it varies. You know, 22 to 33.
Mm-hmm. And how about for
we're about South? The same.
About the same.
Yes.
Let me get, looks like Jose from Burlington County to join our conversation. Jose, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wonder whether or not the school districts work with community-based organizations in delivering social services through their contract to the community.
The idea of working with social service agencies are probably churches. I mean, you just said money, Linda.
Community-based organizations that are funded through the Department of Human Services in supporting community-based services.
Well, in past years, we had a lot of that. But because of the funding crisis, a lot of those things have been cut out the budget. So it's not that we have never done that. It has definitely happened in the past, but they get fewer and fewer. Mm. And they only are able to go to certain schools because of the funding.
But I was reading a profile of you, Linda, that you have partnered with a former federal prosecutor, maybe a current federal prosecutor, mm-hmm. Robert Reed, and bringing sort of him in as part of your team?
As part of my team. Because when I first was sent to Strawberry Mansion, I did not realize the level of, well, I didn't know about the violence in the neighborhood, and I knew I was going to need support. And so I reached out to the city, and someone from the city actually gave me Robert Reed's name, and he came in, and he has been He has been an unbelievable partner, bringing in programs to the schools, from youth court to all kinds of programs into the school, trying to get the young people to understand about the judicial system, about law, about education, about staying in school, staying on the right side of the law. So, yes, we have a partner, but he's an unpaid partner.
Oh, he's an unpaid partner.
He's an unpaid partner.
Here we go. I guess we have to get used to this. No, go ahead, Otis.
So at South Philly, and mind you, I've been there a little bit longer, in my building a little bit longer than Linda's been in her. So we have probably more than 20 different organizations that we work with, whether it be during the school day or after school, to support our students. So, you know, we have WES, which is provides behavioral and therapeutic support services to our students that meet certain, you know, insurance requirements. But so we have in-house therapy for some students because, you know, and they're there every single day supporting our students, and they've been a huge asset. But also from, you know, the Philadelphia Opera Company and Art Sanctuary, doing programs with our students around music, because I don't have a music teacher. So that's one way to, at least if someone says, well, do you offer it? We offer it after school. So trying to get more students involved to participate in activities like that. And over the years, you know, working with, you know, whether it be Wilma Theater and 1812 Productions, I try to meet with anyone and everyone that's willing to work with my students and try to get what I can for free. And I know, you know, and that's what you have to do, and we all do it. Every single principal in the district does that. And working with, whether it be a community-based organization or some type of, you know, program that offers a service that your school may be lacking, because you're always trying to fill gaps, and because there's so many gaps, especially, you know, my experience. My first job as a principal, I was at Springfield Township High School in Montgomery County. There aren't a lot of gaps in services there. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always go and make something better. Don't get me wrong, but
sure,
in terms of
sure.
what the resources that the students there have versus my students at South Philadelphia High School, it's not even close. And so you constantly have to work a little bit harder to fill a gap for the students, so that way you can generate opportunities and interest for things that they can develop their passion around. Because I was a math teacher. Every student that I have is not going to be a mathematician. But I can get them educated. But if I can also get them passionate about something else and something they're interested in, then that leads them to a path of being, you know, a productive and successful citizen, then so be it. So that's why I work really hard to create those opportunities for students.
And Ginland, I was also reading about the hip-hop artist Drake is what, promised a recording studio, or he's building one, or has built one, or it's
He has built one.
He has built one.
Oh, absolutely. So we're, you know, all the musical equipment is not installed as of it, but we do have the funding for that. He has given us the money for that. The renovated space is now ready. And so we're just waiting to get started, you know, to purchase all the musical equipment that is needed to go into the room. So we're excited about that. We're excited about just our exposure that we've had on Nightline and Dateline, just trying to get additional resources to the school. Because unlike Otis, we don't have as many things as Otis has, but we're working on it. But our, you know, he was saying that he looks forward to a lot of people coming in and working with the students, and so do I. But before people are allowed to actually come into my building to work with my students, I have to vet them very carefully, because when you first sometimes meet my students, they are, sometimes people look at them as being offensive, and you know, and so they don't really understand my students' pain, and they don't understand from the position where they're coming from. And so sometimes it's hard to work with them from the beginning. So I have to be very careful about who I allow in there to work with those particular students, because they are a very difficult population of students.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Linda Cleat-Wayman, and again, the principal of Strawberry Mansion High School. Also with us, Otis Hackney. He's the principal of South Philadelphia High School. Bartram High School has been in the news recently. A lot of problems at that school, and both of our guests have had to deal with problems and continue to in their high schools. You can give us a call. Again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
The Choir of Christ Church Christiana 100 supports WHYY and celebrates its 100th anniversary with a performance of Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew Passion with orchestra on Good Friday, April 18th at 7 p.m. Christ Church's music program is known for its advancement of Anglican music and features an 18-voice professional choir. Conveniently located in Wilmington, St. Matthew Passion and the Choir's 100th anniversary events at ChristChurchDE.org.
more than just a race, the 2014 Boston Marathon.
I am not prepared to trade off the liberties that distinguish us as a country for an absolute permanent lockdown.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick on what's at stake for democracy as we all learn the lessons of the bombing a year ago. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, offering its 2014-2015 season of diverse ideas and world perspectives. Seven engaging evenings at the Kimmel Center, with a lineup of celebrated personalities, including historian David McCullough, Dan Rather, Ken Burns, Senator Olympia Snowe, and Alan Alda. More information online at philadelphiaspeakersseries.org, sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. The violence at Bartram High School in southwest Philadelphia has shaken this city. Our guests have had to deal with similar situations at their schools. And again, Otis Hackney and Linda Cleat-Wayman are guests on Radio Times today. And you can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Otis, I'm curious about at what point do you decide that a student just has to be either suspended or even kicked out? I don't even know if that's an option for you.
Well, we have a code of conduct that we have to follow. So a lot of those things are laid out pretty clearly in terms of
if you do this, then that will happen.
Yes. And we make sure we go over it, we review it with the students. They're aware of it. But you know, most of our students have been in the district for a while, so they're well aware of the rules of what you can and can't do. You know, students know you're not supposed to fight. I mean, but that's not one you have to explain, you know, ad nauseum to students to say, you know, if you fight, you get suspended. They understand what
they
it
know
is.
That.
Because Linda said it earlier, our students are not afraid of certain consequences. So when you say you suspend them, some students are just like, okay, it's not a big deal. That is, you know, dependent upon the parent piece that we talked about, how that will impact them. Some students, you know, they may do one thing, you get them suspended, parent comes in, and you never have to deal with that behavior again because you know that it's been handled. But it's always a challenge because we have students that, I mean, where it does those consequences really don't matter. So it's trying to get them to modify behavior. And
to make it matter somehow to them?
Well, yes, to make it matter, but also understand, I mean, so they understand what happens, but they don't understand the long-term impact of, you know, if you're suspended more than three times in a school year or for how many days, you know, how you're taking away from your own education and your own opportunities. So it's getting them to understand the impact that being out of school has. But it's very, very difficult because, you know, and even when Linda said earlier, when, you know, a parent can undo, you know, you can have a great day, a student can have a great day, and it can be undone in a matter of moments. And I'm not trying to put everything on parents because we have some good parents in all of our schools. But if you don't get that support to address the behaviors and also with the financial crisis we're in right now, we don't have the resources to do in-school suspension. I don't need to have a dean release full time. My dean, the person that was my dean for, you know, my first 2 years, 3 years there, she's now teaching a full course load. And so therefore I don't have a dean, I don't have an in-school suspension. So when you're dealing with low level incidents, there's not a lot of recourse for you to deal with, and it can stockpile. I mean, it can pile up because you don't have the bodies. And if the students become aware of that, then they say, oh, all right, nothing's going to happen if I do this or do that. So we, as the principals, have been taking on more, and, you know, and administrators in our buildings have been taking on those issues that arise in your building on a daily basis to make sure that the behavior doesn't become so pervasive that you can't function, mm-hmm. that you can't operate as a school.
Lynn, I'm curious mm-hmm. about the way you've talked about your students, and you clearly care about them, but mm-hmm. but you say, you know, they're maybe hard to understand, or not everyone can really understand or even deal with some of the students that you have. Do they think they have a future? Do they think about, you know, in 10 years I would like to be XYZ, I would like to be doing this, I would like to be doing that?
Some do, many don't. And so that's why we talk about rules and consequences as them being able to survive in the world outside of Mansion. Because I always tell the students, if I can't get you to Harvard, I at least want to keep you out of prison. And the only way for me to do that is to make you understand that there are rules and laws in this land that you have to follow. You may not like all of them, but this is why you have to do it. So the struggle always happens in the school where when people will say things like, well, so what, he has on a hoodie? So what, he has on a hoodie? And I always tell the parent and I always tell the student, it's not about the hoodie. It's about the rule that I just break because I think I can. And if you take that out into the world, then you are going to be arrested. So it's that making that leap from the building to the world. And that's what we have to do all the time. And sometimes people do not understand that.
What's the graduation rate at Strawberry Mansion?
Oh, wow. You gave me a number. It's low. I don't even want to say the number because I'm not really sure. It's off the top of my head.
Right. How about for South Philly?
We're in the mid-30s, and it's gone up every year since I've been there, but that just shows how low it was. And we're hoping that, you know, this year be better. So, but it's devastatingly low.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hearing the two of you describe your jobs and just also hearing how much you care about these kids, do you feel like you're haunted by what you can and can't do, Linda?
I don't think I'm haunted. Sometimes I think it's a big burden sometimes, you know. I mean,
you're
a lot of work. You can't really sleep a lot because you're always thinking about something you may have forgotten, because you know if you forgot something important, it could lead to something big the next day. You do have to live with the fact that you have to protect everybody in that building. That is a big burden on us every day, and people do not understand that we take that burden as principals. You know, that when you have a school that got maybe 25, 30 doors, how you got to protect the doors, how you got to make sure no weapons get into the building, how you have to make sure no students hit a teacher, how you have to make sure everybody's in place just in case we need a witness. People have no idea the burden that we carry every day, because we want every staff member to go home safely, not just the students, but all the staff.
I'm curious, at South Philly, have students ever hit a teacher? Has that happened?
Oh, have we had assaults on staff? Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, we have. Like I said, we don't claim to be perfect. When I explain the role of the principal sometimes, and it's for people that don't understand what we do. So just to round it off, I have 1,000 students and about 100 staff members. I'm responsible for every single interaction. You are responsible for every personality in your building. So whether it is one girl rolled her eyes at another girl, you're responsible for that, because if it leads to a fight, you have to manage that. So it could be between adults, it can be between students and adults, or whatever. As a principal, you manage. So I manage 1,100 personalities every single day. That's a challenge. And you're not dealing with, you know, the most compliant group of individuals. So then when you look at it collectively, and if you did some exponential equation to kind of figure out how many interactions happen between 8 o'clock and 3:04 with those 1,100 people, you're managing every single interaction and hope, and with the hope to keep the building safe, because it can lead to so many devastating incidents that could, like I said, take you off track from doing your real job.
And it's interesting, between the two of you, I've heard the word safe probably more than any other word.
Absolutely.
I would say it's the number one priority in any school.
Is to keep children safe.
Yes. Yeah.
And then learning comes after that. I mean, if kids feel safe, I'm assuming that creates an environment, atmosphere for learning.
When schools don't think safety is a priority, let something happen, then they find out how much of a priority it is. People take it for granted, so they'll say, no, academics first. And don't get me wrong, academics is 1 and 1A. But you need to create a safe environment so that way you can foster or create that environment for learning.
Let me get, looks like Tori from University City to join our conversation. Tori, go ahead. Excuse me, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi thanks
there.
For taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm thinking about what I've heard everyone talking about, first about the level of trauma that these kids have experienced, and also certainly the limited resources in the school. I'm wondering about what the principals think about how well community mental health programs like WES have already been integrated. What could happen to better integrate that resource into the schools for you?
The idea of getting more mental health services into the school, Otis, you want to take that?
Well, in high poverty areas, I would say that mental health is probably under, you know, people with mental health issues is underdiagnosed. And you want to make sure that if schools had, every school should have a program like West. But once again, it's not just having it. It's having the right people. So sometimes what happens, people say, okay, everyone gets it. But they don't vet the people and say, we need to get the right people in the building to support this our student population. So having those programs there are key, and you have to be able to provide the space and opportunity for them to do their work, but then also getting them to understand what your expectations are in the building and the students that use those services. You know, so if a student is going for, you know, some type of session or group session during the day, you're still responsible for your work. You're still responsible to do things that you're supposed to do. It's not an excuse. So you have to balance and monitor those things. So once again, like I said, you're managing interactions and managing personalities. You need to make sure that is still meeting your needs. And it's just another thing for us as an administrator to monitor, to make sure, am I getting the results? Because if they can't show that it's in raising achievement or improving my data and, you know, the different indicators that the district or the state, and, you know, and under which I'm observed, or I need to make sure that those things are happening. Because if it's not, then I need to find someone else to get in here to support my students.
Anything you want to add to it?
Yeah, partly my challenge is that even though we have access to those services, my students don't want to take advantage of those services. And sometimes my parents don't want to take advantage of my services. And so once you turn 14 years old, and when you can say yes or no to the service, most of my students say, I don't want the service. So, you know, it can only be court appointed on them. If the student has a choice, they just won't do it. And they just, and we'll call to try to get the support. The support is there for them. And the parents sometimes will come, and the students sometimes will come and go, well, we don't want it. That's a real challenge, because you have to still deal with that student every day, knowing that he has mental illness and that he thinks we have supports out there for them, but they just won't take it.
And how many students at Strawberry Mansion, or what percentage of students would be considered special ed or have some of these needs that we've been talking about?
Well, I have almost 40% of my students are special needs.
Wow. And that runs the gamut.
And
learning disabilities, and
that's, too. Well, that's 40% of diagnosed students that are special ed. Now, I'm not talking about the other 60%. A lot of them also have mental health issues, and a lot of them also have emotional disturbances as their secondary disability. So, you know, it's the entire population, because a lot of them who are not in that number are also traumatized and need support.
Let me get Randy from Germantown to join our conversation. Hi, Randy. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I was calling regarding an earlier comment with respect to creating safer schools for learning. Have either of you considered the programs of like conflict resolution education, which is essentially, you know, teaching students, teachers, administration about constructive ways to deal with conflict,
sure,
as well as infusing it into the curricula, so it's sort of like, you know, everyone's on the same page of understanding how to deal with conflict, and then also having things like standalone programs like in restorative justice to address violence as they occur, and having maybe things like student panels to address, you know, issues,
sure,
rather than having just like a top-down kind of administration, like hearing cases, but having students involved to build a stronger school community.
Randy, thanks for the call. Otis, I'm tossing that to you.
So one thing that I've been urging or requesting since I, you know, returned to the district was to get restorative practices in my school. And so this year we were able to get – we're just getting started up and running with restorative practices. And it's been a challenge, though, because in terms of getting those things to work, I tell people, or for me, from my experience, the most influential – thing you can do to change student behavior is to change adult behavior. Adult behavior dictates the tone and climate of the building. And you can see it in even your most challenging schools. You can go from one classroom to the next. It could be chaotic in the hallways or chaotic next door, but then you go into this one teacher's room and it's a full class. Everybody's working. Everyone's highly engaged. You can ask any student what's going on. So, but we are working on getting the restorative practices piece fully, and it's going to be about a 2-year plan for professional development to get the adults to understand that, to buy in, and then getting the students on board with understanding the role of restorative practices and what it means in the school. But it's very difficult, because when you become a restorative school, everyone can be thrown into the circle. So adults have to be responsible for their behavior and manage how they respond to kids and how they treat and respect the kids, because you don't want to be in a restorative circle and a student call you out. because so it's very difficult. We've had some teachers that have bought into it, and you know they're using circles in their classroom, but it's still trying to get more and more staff to do it, so that way the students have experience with using it.
And Randy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Linda, what I heard in Randy's call was also giving students some autonomy, some control over their life in the school. Mm-hmm. You've been talking a lot about rules and regulations, mm-hmm. but you know kids want to also feel some sense of ownership empowerment.
Absolutely, and also that's why we have youth court. And we have kids, students are given cases where they actually decide what they think should be a consequence or a reward for what happened. So we are trying to do that, but it takes time. And I've only been there, this is only my second year. And right now, what I had to tackle first was to make sure all the students understood that Strawberry Mansion is a school. It's a school. All right, let's be clear, this is a school first. And so there are so many things to take on. And yes, the way we actually come to decide on rules and things that we'll do, we always meet, and we often meet, and talk about what do they want and what do you want to bring to the school community and your role in it, though. And see, you got to remember, students always want to talk about what we are supposed to do for them, but they don't want to talk about their role in the situation. So that's what we're trying to teach the students at the time. It's a two-way street in here, and we can have a good time. We can learn a lot. There are a lot of things that you all can be a part of, but you still have to understand there are rules and consequences. It still keeps coming back to that at Strawberry Mansion. Other schools may be past that, but that's where we are and that we fight with every day.
Well, I really appreciate the fact that you took out time of your busy day to join us on Radio Times, and I thank you for your very important work, and I learned a lot talking to both of you today on Radio Time, so thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Otis Hackney, the principal of South Philadelphia High School, and Linda Cleat-Wayman, the principal of Strawberry Mansion High School. And again, we called them up because certainly the schools in Philadelphia have been very much in the news, and the violence at Bartram High School also very much in the news has frankly shaken the city here. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter and podcasts and email and archives and satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.